I'd like to propose for your consideration two different models of mission. The first model has to do with a ship setting sail to a far-off land. Let's say you are the captain of the ship. And mind you, this is in the days before the development of communication technology. So you are the captain of the ship, and some very important person has enlisted you to carry out this mission for him or her. Perhaps it's carrying some merchandise to that far-off land. Maybe it's delivering a message. Perhaps it's providing transport for a person. In any case, you are the one that this person has chosen to carry out the mission. So you show up, you report for duty, you find out what the person wants, and then you set out. Now, in this model of mission, it's very true that someone has called you. Someone is sending you. But once you set out on that mission, on the journey, you're basically the one who's in charge. You're the captain of the ship. You decide what route you're going to take. You decide how you're going to weather the storms that arise. You're the one who directs the crew members based on how you believe they can best be of service to the mission. You are in charge of the mission. Yes, you have your marching orders from someone else, but essentially you are the one who's in charge. Now, how in this model does the mission become successful? Well, you basically have to rely on your own skills, your own abilities. You studied navigation, you learned how to read the stars, you learned about, well, I guess out on the sea there aren't really landmarks, are there? But you learned how to navigate through the waters to arrive at other places. So you basically depend on yourself and your crew members and their skills, and probably a great deal of luck, let's be honest. That's our first model of mission. Our second model comes from a more modern-day example, and that is a mission to the moon. Now, in this example, this model, you have gone to school for years and years. You have studied the science of being an astronaut, whatever that's called. You've gone through all kinds of training, and because of your great abilities, your brilliance, you have been chosen to be among a small handful of people sent on this mission. And so you show up, there's the countdown, blast off, and there you are in outer space. In this model, at every step, every moment of the journey, you are in constant contact with Central Command. The success of your mission depends very critically on your ability to maintain contact with the ones who sent you into space. I suppose you could decide to turn off your headset, disconnect the transmitters and whatnot, give it a shot on your own. That's a bad idea. If you do that, you're most likely going to fail in your mission. And most likely, it'll cost you your life. So you do have to put your own skills to work in this example, in this model. You do have to rely on what you learned in your studies and through your training. But ultimately, in the big picture, the success of the mission depends on your ability to stay connected to the one who called you and sent you. We look at these two different models. I think we can apply them quite easily to our spiritual life. We might ask ourselves the question, are we more like the ship captain who sets out, having understood what the mission is, and then taking over? Are we more like the astronaut who maintains constant contact? Perhaps the reality is we're somewhere in between. But we look to the example of Jesus Christ himself. He teaches us how to be successful in the mission. Look at the life of Jesus. The Father sends him into the world to accomplish something. And the Father doesn't just say, okay, I'm sending you into the world, you take care of things, and then report back to me at the end when you're finished, and everything will be great. The scriptures tell us Jesus was constantly praying to the Father. How many times in the scriptures do we see Jesus going up the mountain to pray? He spends the night in prayer. He's always in contact with his heavenly Father. Always. And that's why his mission is successful. It's because Jesus is constantly connected to God that he is successful in accomplishing what he was sent to do. So it is for us. Today's readings speak very much about discipleship, not so much about mission. They talk about the call. We have the example of Samuel. We have the example of those first disciples seeing Jesus, asking him, where are you staying? He simply says, come, and you will see. So the response to that initial call is that they went and saw where Jesus was staying, and they stayed with him. So that's what it seems. That's what discipleship seems to be in its essence. Becoming a follower of Jesus means going and being with him, remaining with him, staying with him, spending time with him. But that's not all, because we know that every disciple that Jesus ever called, he also sent. So it seems like there's kind of a paradox at play. Jesus calls disciples and he wants them to stay with him, but then he sends them away. He says, go out into the world, make disciples of all the nations. So how can those people, how can all of us as disciples remain with him and go away to the farthest corners of the world at the same time? Pope Benedict summed it up very capably, very, very well when he said, the apostles have to learn how to be with the Lord in such a way that even when they go to the farthest ends of the world, they can still be with him. And that's our task as disciples and as ones who are sent by the Lord. Learn how to be with the Lord, to stay with him, to remain with him. It's a matter of staying in that constant contact, always having the lines of communication open between him and us. You might say, well, that seems like a lot to ask. To always be in contact with God? Well, I'm not talking about being on your knees 24 hours a day in, rapt prayer. We're talking about an awareness of God's presence and allowing him to continue to be with us in every department of our life. A modern spiritual writer likens the human heart to a mansion with 30 rooms in it. And he says, you can give the Lord access to a few of those rooms. Maybe that's how we often operate. Or maybe we even set aside one of those rooms and say, okay, this is where I'm going to encounter the Lord. This will be sort of the chapel in my mansion. That's especially where the Lord is present, and I devote that room of my mansion to him alone. Do you think that God is really satisfied with having access to only one of those 30 rooms? So maybe we'll get generous and say, okay, Lord, 5, 10, maybe even 20 of the rooms. Or if we're having a real red letter day, we'd say, all of my rooms, Lord, you can have access to, except one. We always want to reserve something for ourselves, don't we? We always want to sort of keep something, or we're afraid that if we give more and more of ourselves to God, we'll be missing out on something. But that is a huge deception. It's precisely in giving ourselves more and more and more to God that we find satisfaction and fulfillment in life. That's where true joy is to be found. And that's where our work, our relationships, our whole life becomes fruitful. We can accomplish things by our own strength, sure. But when we invite the Lord into every place in the mansion of our heart, then everything we do is going to become fruitful in a supernatural way. Remaining with the Lord. What does Jesus say? John chapter 6, verse 56, I think. Whoever eats my flesh and drinks my blood remains in me, and I in them. Sometimes maybe our week seems like that 30-room mansion. We devote a part of that week to the Lord, and we experience his presence in a powerful way right here. The challenge for us then is to have this encounter permeate the rest of the week. He wants to remain in us. He wants us to remain in him. And when we do that, our odds greatly increase of having our mission be successful.